Welcome back to the Ohi's Mishnah Yomis. My name is Jacob Bromwitz, and today we'll be concluding Maseches Sanhedrin and beginning Maseches Makos. The last Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Perek Yud Aleph, Chapter 11, Mishnah Vav, Mishnah 6. Hamisnabe b'shem Avodah Zarah, someone who prophesies in the name of an idol. V'amar kach amra Avodah Zarah, and he says, thus saith the idol. Afilu kiven es ha-halacha. Even if he's saying something that's accurate, even if he's saying a true law, latameas hatame, latahiras hatahor, for example, he's going to declare something unclean that actually is unclean, or declare something clean that actually is clean. Nevertheless, prophesying in the name of an idol is a capital crime. Haba'al eshes ish, one who has relations with another man's wife, kivan shenichnas l'roshus habal l'nisuin, as soon as she comes into the husband's domain in order to get married, afal pi shelo nivla, even though they have not yet had marital relations. Hoba aleha hari ze bechenek, if someone has relations with her other than the designated husband, the penalty is strangulation. V'zomame bas kohen uba'ola, and the people who are false witnesses against the daughter of a kohen and the adulterer of the daughter of a kohen. Shekol hazomamin makdimin la'oso misa. They get chenek, that's their penalty, strangulation, even though witnesses who lie normally get whatever it was they sought to get for the person they're lying about. Chus mezomame bas kohen uba'ola, except for the ones who lie about a kohen's daughter having an adulterous affair and her adulterer. And there's two ways of understanding and her adulterer in this phrase. So the Tosfos Yontif says, Nira dahachi ka'amar, it seems to say, chutz mi kisha hazumu labas kohen im ba'ala. It's talking about a case where they lie about the bas kohen and her adulterer. Shagam ba'ala nidon, because the guy is also being judged. So if they lie and they say this bas kohen who's married had an affair with that man, well, then she would be liable for the penalty of burning, sreifa, but the man would be liable for the penalty of chenek, strangulation, so they get the penalty that they sought for him, not the one they sought for her. And let's look in the Bar Nora to wrap up the perek. L'roshus habal, so the girl is being given over to the husband's domain. So the case is that her father gives her over to the husband's messengers. They're going to bring her to his house, and they're still on the road. Sulo karina ba besaviha. So she's no longer considered in her father's domain, so she's in the husband's domain. Uboala, and the one who has relations, extramarital, an affair with the daughter of a kohen, klomar, that means to say, v'kol habolim nidonin kamisa sanivlas, that normally the adulterer and the woman with whom he had adultery get the same death penalty. Chutz m'boala bas kohen, shehi besreifa v'hu bechenek. The exception to this rule is one who has adultery with the daughter of a kohen, because she gets sreifa, burning, and he gets chenek, strangulation. That is the end of Mishnah Vav, and we now turn our microphone over to Shlomo Schwartz, who will start the first Mishnah in Maseches Makos.
Welcome to the Mishnah Yomi. This is Shlomo Schwartz, and we are beginning a new Masechta, Masechta Makos. Makos, in the order of Seder Nezikin, follows Sanhedrin. There happens to be a difference of opinion as to whether Makos was its own Masechta, as we have it today, or was part of Masechta Sanhedrin. The Rambam, in his introduction to his Pirush on Mishnayos, mentions that it's its own Masechta. However, the Yerushalmi seems to indicate that it was originally included as part of Masechta Sanhedrin. The Masechta is called Makos, as a reference to the punishment of lashes, or malkos, where the Torah says arbaim yakenu, we get 39 lashes for certain transgressions, and because one of the three prakim, the third parak of Makos, deals almost exclusively with the punishment of malkos, therefore the name of Makos was given to the Masechta. The Masechta opens up our first Mishnah with a discussion about a certain aspect of Edim Zomamin. So just to give a brief introduction regarding Edim Zomamin, the Torah says, it's a chiddush, that if two Edim testify, two witnesses testify that somebody is deserving of a certain punishment. He did something wrong. And before the, obviously the punishment was carried out, the Edim were Muzam. Muzam meaning, another pair of Edim came and said to the first pair of Edim in Besdin, how is it possible for you to testify that such and such happened when on that day that you claim you were there and witnessed certain actions, you were with us, so it's impossible for you to have been there. That's called Edim Zomamit. Such Edim, the Torah tells us, Vasisim lo kasher zomam, lasos la'achiv, that these Edim are punished for their intentions. So whatever it is that they intended to do to the other person, that they testified about, even though the testimony, the punishment relating to that testimony was not carried out, for the intent alone, they are punished as if they had carried out the punishment against the person they testified. That's called Edim Zolomin. Our Mishnah starts off and talks about actually exceptions to the punishment of Edim Zolomin. Normally, if a pair of Edim are Muzam, which means they're found by another pair of Edim to be invalidated because they were not possibly present at the time that they're claiming to have witnessed a certain event. So normally they would get the punishment they were trying to occur upon the person they testified on. In the cases in our Mishnah, these are all exceptions where for one reason or another, we cannot carry out that punishment that they had intended, and therefore, instead, another punishment is meted out to the witnesses. And with that, let's start Mishnah Aleph. Mishnah says, Ketzed ha'edim nasim zomamin. How are these edim that are supposed to have a din hazama applied to them, but for certain circumstances, as we said, could not have that punishment meted out against them? How exactly are they punished so that they are considered Edim Zomamin, meaning that there's a certain element of punishment attributed to them for their testimony? So the Mishnah gives a few examples. Example number one, Meidim anu b'ish ploni, they're testifying on a Kohen, and they're saying that this Kohen, Shehu ben Grusha o ben Chalutza, that this Kohen is either the son of a divorced woman or the son of a woman who had Chalitza performed. In each of these cases, if he were a Kohen, he would be disqualified apostle from the Kohen. He would be considered a Chalol because a Kohen is not supposed to marry a Grusha, min HaTorah. Midrabanan, they also said that a Kohen should not marry a woman who received Chalitza. So the Ben Grusha is Min HaTorah, a Chalol, and therefore disqualified from the Kohuna, and a Ben Chalutza would be disqualified Midrabanan. So the Edom are coming and saying that this person here that we are testifying on, who is a Kohen, is a Chalol because his mother was either a Grusha or a Chalutza. And then it turned out they became Edim Zomamin, that they were invalidated because other Edim came and said you couldn't possibly have been there at the time of the divorce or at the time of the Chalutza where you claim you were there, you were witnesses, because you were with us at that time, so it's impossible. So now there's difficulty in trying to enact the punishment or enforce the punishment they were attempting to do on this Kohen. And we'll explain that in a moment. So the Mishnah says, Ein Omri, do not say, since you cannot, assuming these witnesses are Kohanim, you do not say, Yasaze ben Grusha ben Chalutza Tachtov, that the Edim are therefore now given the status of a Chalol, and they are considered as if they were a ben Grusha or ben Chalutza in the place of the person they were trying to give this false testimony. And therefore, if they are Kohanim, they would be possible for Kohuna. You do not say that. Mishnah says, why not? I'm sorry, the Gemara explains why not. Because, first of all, by trying to give a Kohen the status of a Cholol, they are not just doing something to the Kohen himself, but to his descendants as well.
And the pasuk says by Zomamin, it says Vasisem lo kasha zomam. You should do to him that which he had intended to do. So the punishment is only to the person himself, not to his descendants. Lo velo lazaro. So by trying to make the witnesses become a chalalim, the status of a chalal, and making them pasul for kohanah, they would also make their children pasul for kohanah, and that's not what the punishment of Edom Zomamin is. So it could only be for them themselves and not for their children. However, if you try and punish only them and not their children, then that is not being Mekayim Kasher Zomam, because Kasher Zomam is exactly what they had intended to do to the other person should be put on them. And what they intended to do is make this Kohen a Cholol, which would extend to his descendants. So therefore, since it's not possible to be Mekayim the Pasuk of Kasher Zomam, Asisam Lo Kasher Zomam, so we say that they get Malkus instead. That's what the Mishnah is saying. In Omrim, we do not say, Ye'osa Zeh, that these witnesses who are Kohanim should become Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza Tachtov, get the status of a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza, and therefore be possible for Kohuna in place of this person they were saying testimony on. Ella, instead, Loke Arboim, the way the Pasuk of Kasher Zomam is effectuated is they do receive a punishment, and the punishment is Malkus. Another example of a case where we cannot be Mekayim the intended punishment of Zomamin, and instead we have to give another punishment, is in the following case. Ma'idin anu b'ish ploni. They say testimony on a certain individual, shehu chayev liglos, that he is chayev golos. Person goes into golos if chas v'shalom he committed a murder b'shogeg, by mistake. So they're saying effectively that this person they're saying testimony on, by mistake, had murdered someone and therefore needs to go into golos. And then we find out that these edim are zomamin. They could not possibly have witnessed the murder because they weren't there at the time. And the Mishnah therefore says, in Amram you do not say yigla zatachtov, that these edim upon being found zomamin should go into golos in place of the person they were saying testimony on. The reason being, because there's a pasuk by the parsha of Golos where it says Hu Yanus, and the Gemara learns out Hu Yanus, the person runs to the Arei Mikla, to the cities of refuge, only applies to the person doing the murder, not Edom who becomes Zomamin, Hu Velo Zomamov. So therefore, the Edom do not go into Golos, and what then happens to them? Elalok Arbaim. They also, because we do not enact the punishment that they intended, they get Malkus instead. That's case number two. Case number three, Me'idin Anu B'ish Ploni. If Edom testify on a certain individual, Shagerish Asishtai, that he had divorced his wife, and V'lanasun Laksubasa, he did not fulfill his obligations in paying out the ksuba. So here, what exactly, let's say this ksuba had a value of $500. How much do the Edom Zomamin have to pay? So the Mishnah says, it is possible that today, tomorrow, or any time in the future, it is possible that he would have to pay out the ksuba. So it's not that the Edom are creating an obligation that would never happen. It is possible that if he would have divorced his wife, that he would have to pay the ksuba. Or if his wife became an almana, then she would collect in the ksuba. So if either of those two events happen, and it's possible one of them may down the road happen, then she would collect. So what we're effectively doing is possibly accelerating or guaranteeing the payout of this ksuba with their testimony. So what do? Mishnah says, Omdin, we calculate, we assess, kama adam rotze litain, how much a person would be willing to give biksubasu shalzu for the value, the rights to buy this ksuba, so that if the woman would become an almana, a widow, or niskarsha, or she would become a divorcee, then the rights to the ksuba would remain to the person buying the ksuba. However, the person buying the ksuba, buying the rights to the ksuba, would take the chance that v'imesa, that if she died first, if the woman would die first, then yirushena baila. Then the husband would collect on the ksuba. So what is the value that a person will be willing to spend in order to buy the rights to the woman's rights to the ksuba? And that is the amount, it's actually a machlokas in the mefarshim, that is the amount, according to one opinion, that the edim would have to pay to the husband. There are others who say that it's not that amount, but the difference between the amount of the ksuba and the amount of the value someone would pay for the rights. So if somebody would be willing to pay $100 for the rights, the woman's rights to the ksuba, and the amount in the ksuba is $500, then the difference between 500 and 100 or 400 is the amount that they would have to pay to the husband. Both those opinions are brought down in Rishonim. So it's a machlokas as to what exactly would have to get paid out. A fourth case. Ma'idin ono b'ish pleni. If they say testimony and a certain individual, shu chayv l'chaveri elav zuz, that this person borrowed 1,000 zuz, al menas litnam lo, in order to return it, in other words, he borrowed the money and to return it, v'achloshim yom, v'akut mikan v'achloshim yom, within 30 days. So they're testifying that Reuven borrowed money from Shimon with the intent, the agreement was to pay it back in 30 days. V'hu omer, and he says that it was mikan v'ad eser shonim, that he had originally borrowed the money with a 10-year payout, and he had 10 years to pay, not 30 days. So what exactly did they make this person lose? What were they intending to make this person lose? So the Mishnah says, we figure out that it's the value that somebody would pay to be able to have a loan for 10 years, as opposed to have to pay back the loan in 30 days. That value is what we should assess, and that is what the Edom should have to pay the borrower, Reuven. Omdin, the Mishnah says, we estimate, we assess, Kama Adam Rotze Lita, and how much a person would pay, V'yeh B'yado Elav Zuz, in order to be able to have access to a loan of 1,000 Zuz, Be'nosna Mikan V'ashloshim Yom, the difference between if he had a loan for only 30 days, Benosnan, or having a loan, Mikan, that is a shone, having a loan for 10 years. And that value that a person would be willing to pay for that extra 9 years and 335 days, that is the amount that the Edom would have to pay to the borrower. And this Mishnah, again, as we said, are all examples of Edom Zomamin, where the punishment meted out to the Edom are not what they intended to do. For one reason or another, we're not able to apply that punishment, but instead, a different punishment is applied to the Edom Zomamin. And with that, we end Mishnah Aleph, and look forward to continuing next time with Mishnah Beis.